Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of The Damage Report. An episode that is going to be so fabulously made up, it will blow your damn mind. Because not only am I here, but also Jason Carter returns. Jason, how's it going?
It's going great, John. Glad to be here. Happiest of holidays to everyone. Water today, no caffeine, water. Yeah, I know. I'm turning over a new leaf.
I went out of my way to get one of these because I assumed you would have one. No, and you're drinking like water, like a healthy guy.
Who am I? It's the season for drinking water because yeah, I've been guzzling the caffeine, but that and also I didn't have any more in the fridge, so that's why we're stuck
that's
on.
That's a good point.
Right, yeah, so I'm, but we're sold out. But glad to be here. Glad to be back.
Glad to have you here. Glad to have your festive background. Let me just say that I have at my house a Christmas tree. Mine is white as well. It's like a dusted, fake, snowy one. So white Christmas tree squad, rise up. But anyway, we started off right before the show began. We were having a impassioned discussion about whether Spider-Man matters. Perhaps we'll be able to continue that as the show goes on. But what you can expect through the course of the next 90 minutes is a whole bunch of stuff. We're going to be talking about stocks and Kyrsten Sinema and even a last minute addition to the rundown, which is going to be NFTs. Because we got to talk about it now. I saw something, Dan Evans, friend of the show, tweeted something, and we got to talk about it. But with that said, everyone watching, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that would be great. So people know we're live, you know, algorithms and all that stuff. And if you want to send us tweets, comments, super chats, and all that, we'll respond as we go. But with all that said, Jason, are you ready to talk about some stuff?
I'm ready to talk about some stuff. Let's do it.
Okay, well, I've got stuff for you. Let's jump into this video.
Be banned from trading individual stocks while serving in Congress?
No, I don't know to the second one. This is a free market and people, we have a free market economy. They should be able to participate in that.
Okay, so that is Nancy Pelosi, Speaker of the House, one of the most powerful Democrats in the country, being asked about what many, and I think more and more over time, think is clear corruption, which is representative senators being able to buy and own individual stocks while making decisions that will benefit or hurt the individual companies that they own in. That seems like obviously corruption to me. And some have been pushing for that to be outlawed as a practice. So not only, Jason, does she not have any interest in that, but her argument as to why was it's a free market. She responded in almost the exact same words, I would imagine that a Mitch McConnell would or anyone else working with the Republican Party. That's the argument that she made for why we shouldn't have any oversight of the sort of stock ownership that our representatives can have.
Well, it's also because, you know, first of all, it's reported that her net worth is like what, over 120 million as of 2021. And her husband, of course, trades stocks. He's an investment banker. He does that sort of thing. She's kind of, you know, has her hand in the pot. Of course, she wants people to trade. It keeps her pockets lined. Here's the thing: you would think that people who work in the highest courts in the land, in the most respected buildings in America, and uphold these truths to be evident and all that stuff of American justice would also do things with integrity, right? Because they go on the Hill, they pass these bills, they want everything to be done fairly and righteously and make sure that, you know, we're not counting the little guy out, American citizenship, et cetera, et cetera. But then when it comes to their money, when it comes to what's lining their pockets, well, hold on.
Yeah.
Let's rethink this now, you know? So that response from her, I'm not surprised by it, but I think they should be able to invest, but if they do it with integrity and ethically. Because I mean, sure, they are tasked with creating policies and making sure that things are on the up and up. So you would think that they would uphold those same ethics in their doings and in their activities, which makes sense, right? Logically, yeah, that makes sense. Realistically, that's, I would imagine, isn't the case. So I'm not surprised that Nancy Pelosi said that. But again, getting back to how much she's worth a lot of money. And people who are worth a lot of money want to stay being worth a lot of money. They also want to make sure that a lot of money is coming back into their into their reality. So not shocked by that answer at all.
Yeah, and let's be clear, like nobody who is saying they shouldn't be allowed to own individual stocks thinks that they should be barred from investing in any fashion. They could own mutual funds, they could own index accounts, those sorts of things that would mean that if, you know, generally a sector or the entire stock market is doing well, they will do better. They can do all of those things, but it seems crazy that we would tell like the head of IBM generally cannot own stock in that corporation because then the insider information they would have would allow them to make decisions. Right. But somebody who's on a panel who can like pass or reject legislation that could like devastate IBM, they're allowed to own it. That just doesn't make sense to me. And we know last year, multiple senators and representatives were clearly making decisions based on the behind the scenes privileged information they had about what the pandemic was gonna look like. And they were financially benefiting themselves while going out there and telling us lies about how everything is gonna be great because they didn't want us to potentially bolt from different investments. But as Jason is saying there, she is very wealthy. I don't know exactly what she's worth today, but I know that according to opensecrets.org back in 2015, she was worth $100 million. And since once you reach, let's say $10 million in net worth, there is literally nothing in America you can do that will stop you from ever being rich for the rest of your life.
Right.
I have a feeling she's probably doing okay. And so what it shouldn't be necessary to say, but I want to continually try to get through to people that like if one person makes 20,000 a year and another makes 70,000 a year or 150,000 a year, they can still in a lot of ways sort of live the same life. Mm-hmm. When you are worth $100 million, to me, you are an alien entity.
Right.
It's like we grew up on like X-Files and stuff. So we think, oh, aliens are like little green people, but they're probably like us. No, they're probably nothing like us. They probably have nothing in common with us and don't think the same way as we do. Why would we assume that someone who has more individual value than everyone I've ever known in my life combined would think about anything the way that I do? I'd have more in common with an entity from Venus than I do from a person who is worth $100 million. But she's in a position of power, Jason, so she gets to decide, not based on what's good for us or what's good for the country or what's good for the government, but what is individually good for her. And that is how she's gonna make these decisions.
I would agree. And it's always interesting how people jettison like common sense when it comes to dealing with money. Have you ever seen someone who super nice, really cool person enter the conversation of money or owe them money and they're a completely different person? I feel like that's Nancy Pelosi when she's this upstanding woman, Speaker of the House, as you said, one of the most powerful people in the world. But when you start talking about money, her Sasha Fierce comes out. Her alter ego emerges because now it's hitting her in a place that's very visceral for her. So I don't know, John, you make very sound points there. I do agree, and I don't know anyone that's worth $100 million. I was actually shocked to know that Nancy Pelosi is worth that much. And it's also interesting thinking about how much she makes as Speaker of the House. Not that much money.
No, not that much.
But it's a lot, but not
$100 million.
Compared to us mere mortal peasants on Earth, not the aliens and that planet, it's probably a drop in the bucket for her. I don't want to assume that she probably gives the money away, but I would imagine that stipend that she gets annually for being Speaker of the House, because that's what it looks like. What reportedly, allegedly, it's like $195,000 a year in that ballpark. Right. I was her, I would donate to charity. Cause what is that? You know?
Yeah, what is that? Buy one of her refrigerators a year, something like that. But anyway, let's talk about why she might be biased in this area beyond just the fact that she has a lot of money. So her husband is investor Paul Pelosi, frequently trades significant numbers of stocks. With her husband's assets considered, Pelosi ranks among the wealthiest members of Congress, according to Insider. Well, she'd better at $100 million. But anyway, a representative for her says the speaker does not own any stocks. As you can see from the required disclosures, with which the speaker fully cooperates. These transactions are marked SP for spouse. The speaker has no prior knowledge or subsequent involvement in any transactions. Okay, so she's saying, I don't do the sort of thing that you want to ban. That's all like my husband. And I don't talk to him or whatever. But here's the thing. Like, so for instance, right before Congress had this antitrust bill that would affect big tech, he sold, he made about $5.3 million, okay, in stock sales. So what we're supposed to believe is that Nancy Pelosi, who we have to assume has access to as much information as anyone in government about what Congress is going to do. I mean, she's literally the head of the Democrats in the House, sees her husband, who's an investor. He could potentially make or lose millions of dollars. And thanks to her great ethics, she would never share any information. I mean, she doesn't own stock. She wouldn't want to get involved in that. They just probably, they have a wall between their personal life and the information she has as, who the hell believes that? Who believes that?
John, again, you are so on the main today. No one believes that. She, look, she, that's her husband. That's her man, right? Yeah, she may have her own money, but she is adjacent to his business and her position is adjacent to his lifestyle and what he does and his life in its totality. And I'm for sure, her being who she is and who he is goes hand in hand just on optics alone, right? She's a speaker of the house. She's a, Nancy Pelosi's a freaking celebrity. She's a celebrity. She's a political celebrity, right? He is this investment banker. They benefit each other. He, and you mentioned informing each other on things. Her being able to be in the position of power that she is to make these decisions in regards to this act or to have influence over where this act can go about allowing people to invest is beneficial to him. And also him being privy to information in regards to sales and trading and whatnot that will also yield returns in millions of dollars that will benefit her. Even if she has her own money, she's still spending his money too. It's their money together, right? So they both benefit her adjacent position and in who he is. No one's buying it. Good try, Nancy. But yeah, it's what they, what's that? I heard this today at the store. Hogwash. It's hogwash.
It is utter hogwash. It's Hogwarts wash, honestly, is what it is. So Pelosi's position on individual stock ownership is, I think, starting to seem a little bit crazier, because you have people who are coming out and making the case for why it makes sense to stop it. One individual who's been doing this for a couple of years now is Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who tweeted, "It is absolutely ludicrous that members of Congress can hold and trade individual stock while in office. The access and influence we have should be exercised for the public interest, not our profit. It shouldn't be legal for us to trade individual stock with the info we have." I agree. I don't think that they or their immediate family should be able to. And if that's just too much to ask, okay, then don't run for office. Honestly, I don't think it's too much to ask that you should either choose to serve or serve your own personal financial interests. I think that it's very reasonable to expect people to do that. Now, Pelosi's office thinks, no, we don't need these changes because we already have something. So now let's turn to talking about what they do have. Drew Hamill, spokesperson for Pelosi, said that the speaker wants a transparency focused approach rather than bans, saying the Stock Act exists to shine a bright light on trades by members of Congress. Sunlight is the best disinfectant. They're just stealing lines from Donald Trump now. But anyway, so Jason, we don't need to ban them from owning stock, because with the Stock Act, which was put in place because of obvious corruption among our elected officials, we get to know what they're selling, so there couldn't be any corruption. Oh, here's the issue. Dave Leventhal has been on our program, I believe, 752 times to talk about how the Stock Act effectively does nothing. They violate it blatantly, and there's basically no penalties. And they have some recent reporting on it that's been great, showing that many in Congress and top Capitol staff have violated the Stock Act literally hundreds of times already. They found 49 members of Congress and nearly 200 of the highest paid Capitol Hill staffers had violated it in just the last year and a half. Yeah. And when they do, well, then there's gonna be some sort of strike back, right? Some sort of consequences. Yeah, the first time they do, they might have to pay a late fee of $200. And it could potentially go up from there. But we don't even know if they're paying these minimal fines. There's no public records whatsoever that insider was able to find. And they don't have to answer for this. So that's the best disinfectant supposedly, but does it even exist? The bottle might be empty for all we know.
Right, no, John, it's like we have, what's that saying about potential? Potential is nothing without action. Well, you have this really cool act that potentially could do what it's supposed to do, what it's been created to do, and that is to hold people accountable and be the sunlight that is the best disinfectant. God, it's so dumb, but it's very true. Sunlight does kill a lot of germs. It's really good stuff. But you know, you raise a good point. Who's holding people accountable, right? And also these fees that they have to pay, $200. Again, getting back to dollars and cents and the fortunes that these people have. It's like, okay, I'll pay your $200 fee, but $200, $1,000, sure, yeah. Because the information what I'm doing is exponentially more valuable, right? Yeah. So if no one's holding them accountable, no one's taking them to task, putting their feet to the fire, and they're still getting away with this. The Stock Act is just another insult on the American public's intelligence, saying we have these measures in place. They're there, but I don't know. We're not gonna use it. Maybe, yeah. Who knows? Just depends on which way the wind blows this week. Or if, I don't know, or if the University of Miami Hurricanes had a great one last weekend's football game. We might enact it, but don't worry about it. But yes, Nancy Pelosi, I think we should, it's all BS, man. It goes back to the, as you mentioned, the corruption of our American government. And the fact that multiple, I could see if it was isolated incidences, like maybe one, two, three, four, five, but multiple tens of people, more dozens of people have violated this just in the last year alone that are probably very wealthy. It's ridiculous. So
universally,
I don't know.
Yeah. And look, I obviously want us to have this information. If you didn't have the Stock Act, much of this reporting from Dave Leventhal and his associates wouldn't even be possible. But that's just the information. Why would that stop them from using the insider information that they have? Like, having more information is good. In this case, what does it do for us? Why would that stop them from using something that they got in a private briefing to make decisions? Mm-hmm. I mean, in theory, let's say that we had instantaneous access to what they do. Like, they get a trade, I get a notification. Well, then maybe at least I can then do the same thing, like mirroring the information they have. But they're not even, if they abide by the law, they don't have to do it for months, and they don't even abide by the law. So I can't benefit from them having done it. There's no penalties when they do it. I mean, as people pointing out in the chat, when Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue were obviously, 100% obviously using the information they had during the pandemic, we found out about it and it didn't violate any laws, any ethical guidelines. It didn't matter at all. So how is it supposed to stop the corruption? And she's not even making that, like what she said in her comment that we led off the show with was, it's a free market, they should be able to participate in it. So under her argument, Loeffler and Perdue didn't do anything wrong. It's a free market. Her husband didn't do anything wrong, evidently, and they clearly did. So again, like, we're not gonna be able to convince her on this because she has a massive economic interest to hold the position that she does. So we have to get her out of there and as many others like her as possible until we have a critical mass of representatives who hold positions that aren't about their own economic interest, but actually reflect the public interest.
Right, the public
interest. Any final thoughts on this?
Yeah, any final thoughts is that you just mentioned that we need to get her out of there. But here's another thing is that when you have lots of money, it's hard to be removed, right? Some of the most powerful people in the world are very wealthy and have resources to make sure they stay just that and they stay where they are at, or they ascend to greater heights because of their wealth and their position. So this is a clear indication, John, and a very clear example of the haves and have nots, right? And unfortunately, the majority of the American people are the have nots.
Yep, 100%. Okay. We are going to take our first break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about Kyrsten Sinema. So, you know, still bad, but we got some good news coming. Don't worry about that. We'll have that for you in just a little bit. Geez, so far today, Jason has been down on Marvel, down on Harry Potter. I'm getting nothing out of him today. Okay,
well, great. But what I'm not down on is selling Tampa streaming now on Netflix. That is great quality TV. I watched the first four episodes last night. Chef's kiss.
Yeah, somebody, I was just, I think my wife was talking to me about selling Tampa. What reason did we have to be talking about selling Tampa? I'm gonna have to have her.
The Selling Sunset just came out and they had the finale. Yeah. So
there's gotta be some reason.
Right, it's not that good. I'm joking. It's really bad TV. But what we need right now is really bad TV. It's you can skip it. I just like it because it's here in Florida, and I want to see how they make Florida Tampa home of strip malls, which is a great, Tampa's a great place, but how they make it glamorous.
Okay. Well, we're not done with this. We're gonna return to this, but for now we unfortunately have to talk about some other material. So let's jump into this. So yesterday we got some bad news, not unexpected, is that the Democrats were going to be shelving their supposed ambitions that they had to pass the Build Back Better bill this year or ever. But don't worry, we found out that while they would be shelving Build Back Better, they would be moving forward aggressively now on voting rights. So Jesse Rodriguez assured us that that's what they were saying, aggressively moving forward on voting rights, and they did aggressively move forward for like 3.5 hours, and then nope, they're not going anywhere because Kyrsten Sinema says, no, we're not getting rid of the filibuster even for voting rights. I don't care. So that's a fun little headline. And look, that's not surprising either. She has, for all of her corruption and the terrible position she has, she's been consistent. I won't do literally anything or allow anything to be done. That's it. That's her position. She did not get elected to solve problems. She got elected to be a barrier to anything being done, and she holds that position. Now, that doesn't mean that there won't be some lies around the edges. We will get that too. So for instance, when her spokesperson said she believes that the right to vote and faith in our electoral process are critical to the health of our democracy, and I won't lift one damn finger to help in either of those areas. So how critical is it? What does the word critical mean if you won't do literally anything? And in this, I don't just mean like I expect you to get rid of the filibuster entirely. I know she's not gonna do that. Or even expect her to like do a little carve out for voting rights legislation in the same way that they already have for things like SCOTUS nominees or raising the debt ceiling. They've already done it in multiple areas. Why can't they do it here? There are answers, we'll get to them. How about, for instance, if you want there to be a filibuster, how about you, I don't know, make them filibuster? How about you put up the voting rights legislation and the Republicans have to stand and talk, and if they stop, it passes. And you make them show the whole country that they do not want anyone to be able to vote. But no, she won't even require them to actually do the things she says she values so much. So we'll have more on this and her little attempts to do a little bit of jujitsu there. But yeah, once again, Jason, nothing is going to get done, and largely for the same reasons. There's enough people who will stop any progress.
John, for the audience who doesn't know what a filibuster is, can you explain what a filibuster is? Because I had a conversation with someone who was like, what is that? Why do I keep hearing what a filibuster is? How old is it? How does that impact our government?
Yes. No, that's a great point. And sometimes I do assume that everyone knows this, but lots of people start watching these videos, you know, every month, and people internationally. So you might believe that in a democracy, you have a vote on something and the side that gets more votes passes. That would be great. It's not actually how it works in the Senate. Instead, we have a thing which is called a filibuster, which is effectively a traditional way of showing respect for debate and things like that. It means that if somebody wants to stand and speak, a senator, they get to do that for as long as they want. And what that means is if they want to stop the Senate from accomplishing something, they can just keep talking. So when you think of classic movies like Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, that's what it is. It's a person who refuses to yield their spot so nothing can be done. Now that is effectively now just a myth. It exists in movies like that. It doesn't exist in practice because you do not have to stand up and actually talk. What you get to do is eventually they realize that allowing one individual to stop literally anything from being done anytime they want makes it difficult to accomplish anything. So long ago, the Senate decided to change the filibuster by adding what is called, I'm blanking on the word now, but effectively, if you can get together 60 individuals to vote to end debate, you can move on with business. So what that produced was that effectively You no longer needed 51 votes to get anything done. You needed 60 because cloture. Thank you. If the other side can get together 40 people, then they can stop anything from being done. But at least at that point, you still had to actually talk. Now, why does that distinction matter? What's the difference if you have to stand up and talk like in Mr. Smith Goes to Washington? Well, because there is effectively a potential risk of damage to you and your side. If something is being proposed, a bill that's popular, that the people want, and you have to stand and take up time for an hour, for 10 hours, for 3 days, for a week, then that will draw media attention. It will demonstrate to people the lengths you're willing to go to stop something popular from being done. But you don't have to do that anymore. You just have to, every bill is automatically assumed that the other side is gonna filibuster it. So unless you can get 60 people, nothing gets done, aside from the things like Supreme Court nominations and raising the debt ceiling that have had what are called carve outs, which means you can't filibuster them. So there have already been so many times that this has been changed and amended. It's, by the way, not a part of the Constitution. It's just a tradition and a little bit of the rules of the Senate. It's not nothing to do with the Constitution. It's been amended multiple times. And now people like Sinema, in trying to take up as a shield this supposed veneration they have for this great tradition, which again has been changed many times historically, can use it to stop anything from being done. You don't have to take a lot of unpopular stands in voting on legislation if you never have to vote at all because virtually everything is filibustered. So Sinema, who is there in the Senate to benefit millionaires and billionaires, she's been put there to represent them, not us, to do that, in theory, absent a filibuster, would have to make a lot of incredibly unpopular votes, and it would be very clear where she stands on these sorts of things. By maintaining the filibuster, she doesn't have to make those votes. Nothing happens that protects her, and the people that put her in the Senate don't want anything to be done because under the status quo, they're already doing just fine. So this constant gridlock benefits them. It hurts us because we have problems that need to be solved, but it's perfectly fine from their point of view. And that is why we have these nonsensical discussions about the tradition and respect and all. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with whether anything will be done, and they don't want it to be. Anyway, I apologize, Jason.
No, it's not a mess. Thank you for that. Thank you for illuminating that, because like for a lot of people, you so eloquently explained it, don't know what a filibuster is. And may I add, whenever you see a moment of something being filibustered in movies or TV, it's always with someone who's like wearing a diaper to stand there for hours. And you know, seriously, Scandal, that show, the Shonda Rhimes show, had Melly Grant. I don't know if any people watching were Scandal fans, huge Scandal fan. And I, as a matter of fact, I told Cenk on the main show. I said, "Yeah, she scandaled." I'm an idiot, but she she filibustered something. I think she was like wearing a diaper, or they had her like so she had to poop herself. She wouldn't leave the podium until she got her point across. So in movies and in TV, when something's being filibustered, it's always so dramatic and like they're planning on being there for a week. But John, no, thank you for explaining, because I think people don't realize what it is and what it entails. And you hear it time and time again. You see it in headlines. You see it, especially when it comes to political headlines and bills and things being passed in Congress, the filibuster. It sounds like a sale at Target, like the filibuster this weekend, but it's not. So thank you for explaining.
Yes. Yeah, and you know, like I said, it's been changed many times. Hopefully it will be again. But right now it is just very convenient that it exists for some people. And they are willing to allow it to exist, even if it means the Democrats won't accomplish the things they said they would do, and will probably be destroyed politically as a result of it. I mean, after all, she says, she asked those who want to weaken or eliminate the filibuster, weaken, you know, what she means by that is literally making them filibuster, to pass voting rights legislation, which she supports, if it would be good for our country to do so. He warned that legislation could be rescinded in a few years and replaced by nationwide voter ID law, nationwide restrictions on vote by mail, or other voting restrictions currently passing in some states extend nationwide. So this is what they've said now for a solid year. If we get rid of the filibuster and actually do something, then the right will just reverse it. Okay, so then you'd be back where we're at right now. Instead, we just have the right wing status quo. All those things that she's talking about are being passed in state after state after state, and the Democrats nationally have no ability to do anything about it. So the status quo is what the right wing wants. We have one potential tool that could change that balance. And she's saying we can't use it because then someday the right will just do what they want. And I will say what I've been saying over and over again. Her path is a path where the right will retake the House and the Senate and probably the White House in 2024. And they will do what they have always done when they take control, anything they want. There's not much that they want to do. They want to put right-wing justices on the Supreme Court and they want to pass tax cuts. And by the way, they can do both of those things regardless of the filibuster because they can't filibuster either of those things. So I would argue they already get everything that they want when they get in power. When will we get what we want? Not anytime soon if Kyrsten Sinema has anything to say about it. Okay, we're gonna jump into something very different. Gonna have to see him. Should we go? Yeah, okay. Ron DeSantis is very excited because he's got a new bill for Florida. It is the Anti-Woke Act. And we're gonna show you some video of him introducing this.
So today we are going to be introducing to the public, and we have legislators who are going to help us with this, a new piece of legislation for the upcoming legislative session called Stop Wrongs Against Our Kids and Employees Act, the Stop Woke Act. It will do a number of things that are very important. One, it will put into statute the Department of Education's prohibition on CRT in K through 12 schools.
Okay. So look, you already know if you're watching this, it's complete and utter nonsense. It's designed to get his base fired up. It is designed to take up time where in theory, the governor of a massive and wealthy state, you know, might be like dealing with problems facing his constituents. He's not interested in that. So instead, they've assaulted the English language to produce their Stop Woke Act. It's designed to stop the teaching of critical race theory, which is of course not taught in Florida or anywhere in the United States. But if it wasn't clear enough that this isn't actually about critical race theory, the bill is just about stopping woke entirely. Like anyone who's sort of questioned anything or acknowledges that there were issues in the past, we want to stop that. And so they are. So under this new proposed measure, what they're gonna be doing is giving parents a private right of action to enforce the state's ban on critical race theory in schools. The bill also takes aim at such training in companies, allowing individuals the right to sue businesses if they're forced to learn critical race theory. And if this sounds like what's going on in Texas with abortion and what Gavin Newsom is now talking about for here in California to sue gun manufacturers, yeah, that is because the Supreme Court isn't getting involved. They're now putting this into legislation to accomplish every end they want. So what we needed more of in America and in Florida, Jason, so you live in Florida, so this is coming to you, is busybody parents suing the school because a book had a black politician on it or something, and they got really angry about that. So they're gonna sue the school and either tie them up in costly legal battles or just bankrupt the school entirely. And if there's any sort of diversity training at a company, employees will now be able to sue them out of existence. So they're really creating a bit of a paradise there in Florida. Jason, what do you think about it?
You know, every time I'm on here, we have something going down in Florida. It seems like, you know when you get your iPhone alerts, majority of the time it's something that's happening in Florida. Florida, I don't get it, but I think this is ridiculous because young kids and teenagers and kids K through 12, but mainly, you know, from middle school, even elementary through high school, kids are more savvier than ever, right? They're watching TV, they're dialed in, they're on cell phones all day. They're pretty aware of what's going on in the world.
Multiple cell phones.
Multiple cell phones, yes. Hello, Ted Cruz, is that you, DeSantis? Are you still weird? Okay, cool, thank you. But the fact that they don't want our youth to be informed on things that could possibly, especially young men and women of color, that could possibly affect them in the future is ridiculous. When I was growing up in high school, when I was growing up in the 90s and in old grade school and not, we watched Roots. We watched, there was some sort of education about, I don't want to say just blackness, but about history in America, right? So with critical race theory, theories, you're wanting to teach people about the way racism plays into to criminal justice and things of that nature. Why is that wrong? Like, why would you not want to educate people on that or educate the youth on that? I don't understand why that's what is the threat of indoctrinating our youth in those in the ways of what's happened So let's say, let's say we have, I don't know, American studies, and we go back to 1992 and Rodney King. Mm-hmm. Huge moment for people of color in the country. Why would you not want to educate kids on what happened there so things like that don't happen in the future? Like, I don't understand what where is the threat when it comes to, and that's just paring it down. I'm sure there's multiple myriad different other experiences, of course, of racial injustice and things of that nature that have happened, but why should that not be curriculum? They're not even teaching kids in school anything about slavery, anything about, they barely bring up Martin Luther King in schools these days, right? So it's kind of like, why? What is the threat? And then for places like Texas, you have what, Senator Ted Cruz or Rafael Cruz, who is Canadian, and then his dad is Cuban. So I mean, he's a person of color.
We'll get to him.
Yeah, I don't understand what the threat is. It's like trying to teach kids about LGBTQ plus. Oh, we don't want our kids to see that, or that's dirty, or it's just like I don't know. I have a hard time wrapping my head around, again, the threat of making sure that people are educated in the different ways that people move through the world presently and in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, look, it's obviously complicated. We've talked about this many times, and for different people, it's going to be different. So some people actively want more incidents like with Rodney King, or just don't care. And they think, I like the system the way it is. Don't make me think critically about the system. I don't want anything to change. Like, you're saying we should change it because then there'd be less police brutality against black people, but I kind of like the way things are going. So just stop talking about that. There can be a sort of removed apathy. Some people are just actively, they want more of that sort of thing. Others don't want their kids to be any more enlightened about these sort of issues that they were, because they fear, whether consciously or not, that means someday the kids will look back on them and the way they act and the way they talk and not look kindly on that. Most of them, I think, don't even go to any of those levels with it. They don't actually believe anything having to do with it. They know that the schools don't actually teach it, but it's a convenient political tool. Ron DeSantis is not actually worked up about the teaching of these sorts of things in schools. He just, like every Republican, is constantly looking for something to fill the void. He's a politician. It's supposed to look like he's doing something, but he's not there to do anything. So he needs to be doing something. So CRT. And by the way, it's not even that new. So the fact that they're focusing so much on schools and that they've drafted parents into a constant, getting closer to a literal war against school boards, that's a new angle on this. But it's not like Republicans haven't spent the past couple decades arguing against any sort of liberalization of views on race. They've been talking about reverse racism and affirmative action and things like that for literally decades. That is what they've made elections about. They're just tapping parents into it a little bit more than they used to. But they were against anything being taught that was what they called politically correct way back in the 90s. So there are elements of this that are new, but we also shouldn't delude ourselves into thinking that this is a wholly new side of the right. It's an evolution of it.
Well, I think you should be taught and made abreast of all of that, of all of reverse race. How do I say this? I would much rather be informed on the good, the bad, and the really ugly, right? Like, give me the information and let me do what I want with it. So if you said reverse racism and they don't want kids or whomever in this instance to be taught about that, no, absolutely. Give them two sides to the coin, right? Because you want to give them choices to make educated decisions on their own. I think that's how we empower the youth. And the fact that the woke, you said it's an assault on the English language. I couldn't agree more. The Woke Act, if that's not a slap in the face, I don't know what is. But it's, I don't know. I think that I was talking to my brother, I don't know, about a couple months ago when I have a nephew who's 11, and he says that they talk nothing about race in schools now. They talk nothing about anything that's going on in the world to kids, but yet kids are so dialed in and people are so dialed in that it just doesn't make any sense to try to eradicate that type of education or that information out of schools, or not allow, or to have parents not want their kids to at least be aware. If I was a parent, I want my kid to be aware on what's happening. Sure, and John, you make a great point that they're probably feared that their kids are gonna judge them for being crappy parents, being crappy individuals, and things they've done in the past. Nonetheless, I would still want to arm my child with every single tool in our arsenal to not be an idiot and make bad choices, and also not if you are a man of color. not become a victim to some of the police brutality that we've experienced in the last 24 months or throughout, or since Rodney King, or even before that. You know, that's it's so counterintuitive and just ridiculous. But again, welcome to Florida. That's what we do here.
100%. One last point I'll put on this is that I appreciate irony. I have come to understand that pointing it out, irony or hypocrisy in politics doesn't matter because they don't care anymore. But I love that their argument is that systemic racism doesn't exist. And we will, across multiple states, take like the entire political infrastructure of our country to ban you from even talking about it. But there's nothing systemic about any of this. Let's be clear about that. Yeah. Anyway, we're gonna take our second break. When we come back, Tucker Carlson just openly siding with insurrectionists. You know, that'll be fun, so stick around. Anyway, with that, let's jump directly into this video.
What was January 6th? Well, there was destruction of property, which we're totally opposed to. But what motivated it? Why were all those people there? Well, for the most part, a year later, it's very clear January 6th was essentially what it appeared to be. Thousands of ordinary American citizens, voters, people who believe in our democracy far more fervently than Liz Cheney ever has, came to Washington because they sincerely believed democracy had been thwarted. They believed the presidential election was unfair, and they have a right to believe that. And by the way, in many ways, they were correct. The presidential election was unfair, and you don't have to get into anything about voting machines to believe that.
Yeah, well, look, let's be clear. He would prefer not to get into anything about voting machines. He doesn't want to make very specific claims about supposedly what made it unfair, because Tucker Carlson is in this for money, and he's not gonna get money by being sued by one of these companies, by Dominion or whatever. So he's not gonna say, they manipulated the voting machines, they stole your democracy. And he won't even say that it was 100% fraudulent, it was stolen. Because again, he doesn't want to get sued, and he doesn't want to be the cause of Fox getting sued. But the entire thing on the right now is assuring their voters that I believe the same thing as you, but not getting sued. And the way that you do that is, it was unfair, it was totally unfair. You're right to think that it was unfair. He speaks vaguely. It triggers to them that he's on their side, but protects him from legal liability. In the middle of a segment where that entire thing was just him saying, the insurrectionists were right, I'm on their side, it's wrong to criticize them, they don't belong in jail. We've come a long way since January 6th, Jason.
We have. Well, I marvel at the fact that, you know, I assume that Tucker Carlson is a journalist. And normally when you are a journalist, you report things that are actual, factual, and have been vetted thoroughly, right? So everything that about the insurrection, we've seen the pictures, we've seen the video, we've seen the testimony from people who were there, from the guy who almost lost his life. There's just so many different items and different videos and instances that are antithetical with what the right is saying about what happened at January 6th. But yeah, people on Fox News, and by the way, Tucker Carlson's hair, I don't know if that's a toupee or what he's wearing, but some hairdressers need to get him together quickly. It's always opinion. It's always based on opinion. And it's also indicative of how easily swayed that their viewers and their base are, that they get, as you mentioned, triggered by the way he delivers these stories. I would be more apt to listen and to be intrigued and to even entertain the notion that what happened on January 6th wasn't what they're saying it is. If they would, again, as you said, John, come from a more vetted and what's the word I'm looking for? Truthful perspective, right? Like, hey, Tucker Carlson, we don't know what happened that day, but here are the facts that have been vetted and have been, I don't say approved, but have been proven to be true. That's never the case. Anytime, especially on Fox News, when we see any coverage on what happened January 6th of this year, it's always based in the opinion of what he thinks happened, what they think happened, what their sources who they are in bed with that share the same ideologies think happened. But it's never ever based in actual journalism and actual facts of here's what really went down, here's how we can prove that this went down from reputable sources that lean on both the left and the right. It's never that. It's always this heightened sense of these histrionics of what Tucker Carlson just displayed for us.
Everybody in the audience, look at this guy. He's talking about reputable sources in American politics. Come on, reputable sources, come on. This is Tucker Carlson. This is Tucker Carlson who released a documentary saying that the FBI did this as a false flag. This is a guy who like 2 weeks ago said that Alex Jones was one of the best journalists in the country. Alex Jones started off this week, by the way, saying that the tornadoes that killed a bunch of people across the United States might have been, he's not saying definitely, but they might have been the result of Joe Biden using a weather machine to create tornadoes. And I'd like to give a little bit of credit to Alex Jones for not even taking a couple weeks after the Tucker Carlson compliment to like protect Tucker a little bit. Like he instantly jumped back into crazy conspiracy stuff as if to make Tucker Carlson look as crazy as he does. But yeah, no, there's no reputable sources. He's not a journalist. And that's fine. You can comment on the news without being a journalist. I'm not a journalist. I am an analyst and a commentator. That's all I am. But you should, as Jason said, try to use something approaching a reputable source. Try to base the opinions that you have on evidence, on reason, ideally with a little bit of a side dish of empathy as well. But he's not in it for any of that. He's in it to generate a large lucrative audience. And he is objectively better at that than I am, I suppose. He might be doing a little bit of irreparable damage to America at the same time. But hey, what do you get? But can't make an omelet, that sort of thing.
And I think I would implore those that work at the F Network to think about like they're the type of place from viewing them over the years that they've always done what they've always did, so they're always gonna do what they've always done. Yeah. Right. And imagine if I always thought Megyn Kelly was gonna be that person, and then she wasn't with the whole blackface thing on NBC. But imagine if someone went on and said, look, my ideology is this, however, here are the facts. Here's what we do know to be certain, and completely get rid of any kind of political leaning or the brand they're buying into, and allow that in that moment to be the news that is sourced. They would probably have more of an engagement and people who would want to listen to that and get behind that than, well, they have people who get behind them nightly, of course, because their ratings are incredible and millions of people tune into Fox News and watch Tucker Carlson daily. But it just would be really eye opening to see that happen there. And it never does. It never on any of their shows, right? It's always this, like again, these histrionics and these very overarching and triggering displays of just buffoonery. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and again, yeah, shout out. And if Tucker Carlson's makeup artist and hairstylist is watching, that's not the job for you, boo. It's not the job.
Yeah. Look, we only have a little bit of time. I will mirror Tucker Carlson by saying that nearly a year since January 6th, like Tucker Carlson, I believe, yes, it was what it looked like at the time. Mm-hmm. And what it obviously was, it was a group of people who had been lied to by people who they tragically trusted in politics, right, like Trump and Giuliani and others, and in media like Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity. They had been told in advance of the election and in the time between the election and January 6th that it was gonna be stolen, that if Trump lost, it was by definition stolen. They were told that over and over and over again. And these people were spun until they couldn't comprehend anything around them. So despite the fact that there was no evidence that had been stolen, that they lost case after case after case, they believed it, like in their bone marrow, they believed it. And so they also believed that something could be done to stop it. And so they went to the Capitol to try to do that. And any individual person in that crowd might have thought a different thing needed to be done. Maybe some thought we just need to yell. Some thought we have to pressure our politicians. Some thought we need to choke the life out of our politicians. But they went there to try to change the result. And now they have been protected ever since then by people like Tucker Carlson, who will deny the racial component of this, the fact that they were lied to, the fact that they actually did it. He's still trying to say that the FBI just made up the whole thing. And so the issue with January 6th isn't just everything that was done on January 6th. It's that nothing was learned. We're no better protected from this sort of thing than we were on January 6th. And another incident like it is almost certainly coming and is likely to be even worse. Now, with that said, we are unfortunately out of time in our first hour, but I know what you're thinking. No, we want more news. Well, we got it for you, don't worry. If you're on Twitch or on YouTube or on a members app, we got a lot more to talk about. We are gonna be talking about blatant racism from a judge, how you turn a bobby pin into a house, and eventually some incredibly racist NFTs. Stick around, we'll be on for just a few minutes, but we got that for you after that.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.